Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001, Great Masters of the Lie.
Hello. Let's begin today with a few simple statements of fact. First fact, the September 11th attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon was a direct response to the U.S. government's long-term support for Israel's aggression against her neighbors in the Middle East. The attack was not irrational or cowardly or unprovoked, and we were not attacked because fundamentalist Muslims hate America's freedom and democracy or because they want to oppress American women. America was attacked simply because the U.S. government has helped Israel attack and plunder her neighbors. Second fact. Everyone of any consequence in the U.S. government and in America's mass media understands with perfect clarity the first fact. Third fact, everyone of any consequence in the U.S. government and in America's mass media has lied consistently and deliberately about why America was attacked and also about why the U.S. government started a new war in the Middle East a few weeks ago. Fourth fact, the reason for the lying by the media people and by the politicians and government officials is Jewish influence. Jews own or control most of the mass media in the United States, and they also own the politicians for all practical purposes. Fifth fact, if the U.S. government remains subservient to the Jews and continues its Israel first policy in foreign affairs, as it is doing now with its new war against Afghanistan and Israel's other enemies in the Middle East, Americans will continue to pay the price and only Jews will profit. These five facts bear repeating over and over and over again. They are simple and self-evident, but it is easy to forget them in the blizzard of lies and obfuscation coming from the news media these days. One fundamental principle that professional liars rely on is that a lie, no matter how transparent or preposterous, if repeated often enough and brazenly enough, will be believed by most people. And if repeated loudly enough, it will drown out the truth, and even the more perceptive and thoughtful members of the population will forget what is truth and what is a lie. George Bush has told us so many times now that we were attacked on September 11th because fundamentalist Muslims hate America's freedom and democracy, that most of the public believes it. It is important that some of us not forget that it is a brazen lie, and that no amount of repetition will make it other than a lie. Well, it's bad enough having to listen to a not-so-bright politician like George Bush lie to us about matters of the utmost national importance. But he's really an amateur at lying. You can see that little smirk around the corners of his mouth, even when he's lying about very serious things. And that will put you on your guard. Even Bill Clinton was a better liar than George Bush. If the only liars we had to worry about were the politicians and the bureaucrats, we'd be in pretty good shape. The lemmings would stay fooled, but then they're always fooled. At least the perceptive minority would understand that we were being lied to. Unfortunately, however, we also are inundated by lies from those who are real experts at lying, far cleverer at it than the politicians. I'm referring, of course, to the Jews. They are such effective liars that we really must pinch ourselves every time one of them opens his mouth, lest we be taken in. It is, in fact, their absolutely astounding facility at lying that has persuaded me, more than any other difference between us, that an unbridgeable racial gulf separates us from the Jews. It is more than their perverse religion, and more than their distinctive family life, that is responsible for this facility, I am convinced. I believe that it is based in their genes. From far back in prehistoric times, their ancestors spent so many generations in the markets and bazaars of the Middle East, changing money and buying and selling camels and goats and goods of every description, haggling over every transaction, that the ability to lie convincingly became a real asset in the struggle for survival. And it is the adverb convincingly that is the key here. They evolved the knack for seeming to be sincere while lying outrageously. I'll give you a concrete example. And really, the only way to deal with a subject like this is to study concrete examples. Many concrete examples. To look at the details. My example today is a recent paper written for the Center for Immigration Studies by Dr. Stephen Steinlight. Dr. Steinlight spent more than 5 years as the Director of National Affairs for the American Jewish Committee. He's certainly no fringe Jew, but rather is a real Jew's Jew, right at the core of Jewish power. His paper, which you can find for yourself on the Internet at cis.org, is titled "The Jewish State in America's Changing Demography." It is a paper written by a Jewish leader primarily for his fellow Jews, and so is perhaps a bit more revealing of Jewish attitudes than it would be if it were addressed to the general public instead. The general theme of Steinlight's message is that U.S. immigration policy, as it stands today, is not as favorable to Jewish interests as it might be. In fact, he sees some real dangers for his fellow Jews if immigration policy isn't changed soon. The main danger he sees is the loss of the Jewish ability to control the U.S. government. Now, he indicates, the Jews have a tight grip on things. Through their control of the media, they are able to control public opinion. But, he frets, with so many diverse races pouring across the U.S. borders so fast, and with the new immigrants retaining their own racial loyalties instead of assimilating into the cosmopolitan mass of the general public, the Jews may lose their grip. When more than half of the U.S. population becomes non-white during the next 30 or 40 years, if the various minorities still have any sort of separate group identities, the Jews may no longer be able to control the outcome of elections. The way around this danger, according to Steinlight, is not to halt non-white immigration. Instead, it is to shift the makeup of the immigrant flow in a way so as to make it easier for the Jews to control them and to slow the flow if necessary so that the new immigrants can be integrated into the mass and controlled along with the mass rather than retaining their separate identities. Well, that's Steinlight's message in broad outline, which is interesting in itself. But it's in the details of the way in which he says it that we can see the peculiarly Jewish knack for deception. I can't read Steinlight's whole paper to you because it's 26 pages long, but I'll try to give you the general flavor with just a few excerpts. For example, he carries on for pages about how wonderful democracy is, the will of the people, equality, and all that, and how important it is to preserve democracy. And then, on page 7, he says, and I quote, "Is the emerging new multicultural American nation good for the Jews? Will a country in which enormous demographic and cultural change fueled by unceasing large-scale non-European immigration, remain one in which Jewish life will continue to flourish as nowhere else in the history of the diaspora? In an America in which people of color form the plurality, as has already happened in California, most with little or no historical experience with or knowledge of Jews, will Jewish sensitivities continue to enjoy extraordinarily high levels of deference? And will Jewish interests continue to receive special protection? Does it matter that the majority of non-European immigrants have no historical experience of the Holocaust or knowledge of the persecution of Jews over the ages and see Jews only as the most privileged and powerful of white Americans? End of quote. You really need to read that statement over two or three times and let it sink in to get the full impact, to realize that Steinlight has just announced that Jewish interests get special protection because Americans want to make up for the persecutions they have been led to believe that Jews suffered more than 50 years ago during the so-called Holocaust, that it is dangerous to let immigrants in who haven't been indoctrinated with Holocaust propaganda, because they might see the Jews for what they really are, namely the most privileged and powerful group in America. But how nicely Steinlight says that. How smoothly. Well, Steinlight goes on to complain that Jews already are losing some of their power. He mentions the Jews in the Congress who have been replaced by Asians and Hispanics. And he asks whether Jews can ever again hope to have 10 Jewish senators, as they do now, if present immigration trends continue. We should note that if the Jews were represented in the Senate in proportion to their percentage of the population, there would be only 2 Jewish senators now instead of 10. And then Steinlight asks, and I quote, "How long do we actually believe that nearly 80% of the entire foreign aid budget of the United States will go to Israel?" Steinlight says, and again I quote, "Not that it is the case that our disproportionate political power, pound for pound the greatest of any ethnic cultural group in America, will erode all at once or even quickly. We will be able to hang on to it for perhaps a decade or two longer. Unless and until the triumph of campaign finance reform is complete, an extremely unlikely scenario, the great material wealth of the Jewish community will continue to give it significant advantages. We will continue to court and be courted by key figures in Congress." End of quote. Steinlight's paper is really fascinating reading. He says all of the typical mealy-mouthed things about democracy and equality and so on, sounding like a true blue, public-spirited, patriotic American. And then he lets slip the real reason why Jews love democracy so much. It is because democracy is so corruptible. It is because their wealth gives them such an advantage. And gradually one begins to understand that the Jews' whole concern about immigration and politics is Jewish power. That's all that concerns them. And Steinlight actually communicates that message to his fellow Jews. But he heaps on so much obfuscation that the average Gentile will never get it. Here's another little gem from Steinlight's paper. After mentioning how rapidly the political power of the Hispanic segment of the U.S. population is growing, and how racially self-conscious this segment is, Steinlight says, and again I quote, "For perhaps another generation, an optimistic forecast, the Jewish community is thus in a position where it will be able to divide and conquer and enter into selective coalitions that support our agendas." End of quote. Did you catch that bit about divide and conquer? Of course, that was the motive driving the Jews' campaign for the new immigration law in 1965 that brought in the flood of non-white immigrants who have so drastically darkened America in recent decades. And it is the motive behind the Jews' insistence now that our borders be kept open and that the government do virtually nothing to halt illegal immigration. The motive from the beginning was to dilute white political strength, to multiculturalize America so that whites couldn't gang up on the Jews, so that the 2.5% of the population that is Jewish could continue to control the other 97.5% that is not Jewish. And Steinlight admits the virtual Jewish unanimity on the immigration question, as well as the decisive role the Jews have had in shaping the U.S. government's immigration policy. But his admission is cloaked in all of the standard mush about sympathy for the underdog and how the Jews always have been against racism and so on. But now, Steinlight is telling his fellow Jews, now is the time for us to change America's immigration policy again so that we Jews can continue to hang on to our power. We need to have fewer Muslim immigrants and others we are less likely to be able to control. And we need to slow immigration down so that the new non-white immigrants can lose their own sense of identity, shed the influences from their home countries, and become fully Americanized, which means fully subject to Jewish control through the mass media. And Steinlight comes right out and says how that control is to be exercised. He says, quote, "It is also true that Jewish economic influence and power are disproportionately concentrated in Hollywood, television, and in the news industry." And then a few pages later, after saying some very unkind things about Muslims, he tells us, quote, "I suspect that MTV, for better or for worse, will prove more powerful with young Muslim immigrants than the mullahs." What is that if not gloating over his fellow Jews' power to capture and control the minds of non-Jews, even to wean young Muslims away from their religion, away from the influence and guidance of their own spiritual leaders through the Jews' control of the media? He doesn't have to spell it out for his fellow Jews. They already know that MTV is owned by the billionaire Jew Sumner Redstone, born Murray Rothstein, and that the whole aim of MTV propaganda is to multiculturalize young Americans, to cut them loose from their own racial and cultural and religious roots and make rootless cosmopolitans of them with no sense of racial identity or loyalty. The Jews know all of this. But the Gentiles listening to Steinlight will never get it. To communicate the way Steinlight does takes a special ability, a Jewish ability. I'll say this again. Jews, and not just Steinlight, but Jews generally, are able to get away with making such brazen statements because they fuzz them over with lots of contradictory verbiage that keeps the Gentiles trying to figure it out. The Jews in Steinlight's audience read his message loud and clear, while the non-Jews sit there with idiotic smiles on their faces and applaud, having understood nothing at all. I chose Steinlight's recent paper to illustrate this because Steinlight is a policy-making Jew with unquestionable credentials, and because the paper is available to anyone with access to the Internet at cis.org. For those listeners without Internet access, his core message to his fellow Jews is this: we Jews are richer and more powerful than any other group in America. Our power is concentrated in the media. We always have pushed for more non-white immigration into America because we wanted to dilute the power of the white majority. We used the tactic of divide and rule. But now, with America becoming non-white so rapidly, our open borders policy is likely to begin working against our own Jewish interests. We are not able to control large ethnic minorities who maintain their separate identities as easily as we can control those who have given up their identities and become fully assimilated into the mass. In the future, we probably can continue to use our media, such as MTV, to undermine the culture of new immigrants and integrate them into the American mass. But in order to be sure of doing this, we need to slow the rate of immigration a bit, skew the immigration quotas more toward those who are not hostile to Jews, and speed up programs aimed at assimilation. And we should be especially sure that we indoctrinate new immigrants with lots of Holocaust propaganda so that they will feel guilty if they don't let us have our way and keep our special privileges. That's Steinleit's message. It's simple enough, but being delivered the way it is makes it fiendishly deceptive. Unless you think I'm exaggerating or distorting his message by paraphrasing it, I should quote exactly what he says on page 18 of his paper, where he explains how Jews are able to get away with claiming to be loyal to America while actually being loyal to Israel. He says, quote, "We get a free pass, I suspect, largely over Christian guilt about the Holocaust." But he pads that bald statement with a warning to his fellow Jews that they had better be more careful not to flaunt their free pass and had better try harder to seem patriotic. There's one area of Steinleit's paper that gives additional insight into the Jewish mode of deception, and that's his commentary on Muslims, whom he regards as an especially problematic group of immigrants. I'll quote for you exactly what he says, first about Muslim fundamentalists, and then about Muslims generally, beginning on page 21 of his paper. "Muslim fundamentalism is," he says, and I quote, "a totalitarian political ideology with strong theocratic and fascistic elements." He goes on to say, quote, "Islamism is profoundly hostile to pluralism, religious tolerance, democracy, secular civil society, Jews, Zionism, and Israel." He complains about Muslim fundamentalism's, quote, "intolerant religiosity, irrational atavistic values, and misogyny." Gee, what other Semitic religion does that description remind me of? Except for the bit about hostility toward Jews, Zionism, and Israel, what he says about Islam describes Orthodox Judaism perfectly. And there's much more. Steinleit complains about the multiplicity of Islamic social and religious organizations in the United States and how they all stick up for each other. And get this, he actually complains that Muslims, when criticized or questioned, raise the, quote, "red herring of Islamophobia." How noble and honest it is of the Jews that they never raise the red herring of anti-Semitism to deflect criticism from themselves. But that is only the beginning of Steinleit's arrogance and deception. The traditional Islamic faith, he says, and I quote, "is itself not unproblematic in its attitudes toward Jews, Christians, and other non-Muslims. The religious education of traditional non-Islamist Muslims, literalism in Quranic exegesis, theological straitjackets imposed on scriptural interpretation, the study of text without context, and the virtual absence of intellectual self-critique is filled with anti-Jewish teaching as well as a theology of contempt for the followers of other faiths. Powerful strains of religious triumphalism and religious supersessionism are central tenets of Islam. Such dangerous spiritual arrogance has been abandoned by many Christian denominations, largely as a product of Vatican II and years of interfaith dialogue and soul-searching encounter. Christian believers, from Roman Catholics to members of such liberal Protestant denominations as the Congregationalists and the United Church of Christ have, for example, adopted the view that God's covenantal relationship with the Jewish people remains unbroken, and that the advent of Christianity neither erased nor canceled it. No parallel spiritual generosity exists in Islam. End of quote. Well, sadly, all of that is perfectly true. And it is a wonderful example of how a clever liar can use the truth to tell a monstrous lie. It also is an example of the breathtaking height of arrogance to which Jews customarily rise in their lying. There's much more I could say about such things as the way in which the Jews used such techniques as interfaith dialogue to completely vitiate Christianity and make the Christian churches into obedient lapdogs. But I don't want to offend my Christian friends any more than I already have. Study Steinlight's paper for yourself and see where it leads you. Thanks for being with me again today.